Good evening. Sorry about that. They were figuring out how to start the meeting, so we got a little bit delayed. But now we are here. Okay. Hope everyone has having a lovely day and a good start to the week here in Chicago. The weather's been beautiful, obviously. We had a lovely day today and looking forward to great weather the rest of the week. Okay. So tonight, I believe, is a third part in a three-part series on halachic questions relating to the state of Israel. And our third part, which is tonight's class, is really going to focus on the status of the Israeli flag in halacha and Jewish thought in general. Interesting. Growing up, Israeli flag was something which was found in shul and school, and there is, a question which we may or may not take for granted, which is, what is the status? Does it have kedusha to it? Does it have actual holiness? Is it just, it's nice, it's a flag for our country, but is there anything more than that? So tonight we're going to try to explore and answer those questions. And we're going to do so by really going back to the beginning, trying to understand the roots and the history of the flag. And then from there, hopefully we can explore and understand better the status of the flag in halacha. Okay. Let's see if we can pull this up. Here we go. Okay. That shear is blue and white of talasim and flags. That is the topic. Okay. So we're going to try to answer a few questions tonight. The first, is there any religious significance to the Israeli flag? That's the overarching question. And we're going to do that by exploring who designed it. Why is the flag blue and white? Why does it have stripes across the top and bottom? And what does the Jewish star, the Magen David, represent? Those are the questions we're going to try to answer this evening. So first things first. So here we have our very own Theodor Herzl. And Herzl, in his famous work Der Judenstaat, which was his a book he wrote with the claim and the argument for the need for a Jewish state, right? Der Judenstaat means the Jewish state. This Ritivisir was published in 1896 in Vienna. And he wrote in his book the following: "We have no flag, and we need one. If we desire to lead many men, we must raise a symbol above their heads." Remember, this Herzl lived during the nationalist movement, which was sweeping across Europe. And so he's writing it to just appreciate contextually within that sociological phenomena of nationalism spreading across the world. And now he suggests what he thinks the flag should look like. "I would suggest a white flag with seven golden stars." Okay, white flag with seven golden stars. Why a white flag with seven golden stars? "The white field symbolizes our pure new life. The stars are the seven golden hours of our working day." Interesting, I guess maybe they work 9 to 4, not 9 to 5. And living the good life over there. "For we shall march into the promised land carrying the badge of honor." Okay, so we have a white flag with seven golden stars, with this seven stars representing 7 hours of the working day. Seems kind of trivial, small-minded. Okay, and he actually drew a picture of his flag. This is what it looks like. This is the picture of the flag. If you see here is the Here are the, sorry about that. Here are the seven. There's a white flag and the seven stars. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And if you see, it actually had a star make up the corners of the seven golden stars. Now, Herzl wasn't the only one to suggest the flag. In The second leader of the Zionist movement, David Wolfson, who was the second leader, the Wolfson Towers are named after him in Jerusalem. He also, at the one of the Zionist conventions, wrote as follows. This is in his diary. What flag would we hang in the Congress Hall? Then an idea struck me. We have a flag, and it is blue and white. The talis, with which we wrap ourselves when we pray, that is our symbol. Let us take this talis from its bag and unroll it before the eyes of Israel and the eyes of all nations. So they ordered a blue and white flag with the shield of David painted upon it. That is how the national flag that flew over Congress came into being. This is David Wolfson taking in his diary in 1897 at the Congress in Basel, Switzerland, taking credit for the new Israeli flag. However, the problem is that he didn't actually come up with this idea. It existed a few years earlier. In Boston, Rabbi Jacob B. Askowitz and his son, Charles, designed this flag. Already, this is 1891. This flag was designed a full 6 years earlier and hung at the B'nai Zion Educational Site in Boston, Massachusetts. So this flag was the actual original flag. So the question is, if the David Wolfson didn't make it up, if it was really already existed beforehand, what's going on here? So the answer is that Isaac Harris, who was from Boston, he presented this flag idea at the 1897 Congress, and Wolfson in his diary, I don't know why, took credit for it. It's kind of strange. But the flag, whether or not it was Wolfson or it was from the Askowitz family from Boston from a few years prior, but this is the root of the flag. And it should be made clear that regardless of who designed it, it was designed to be based off of the talis.
I have a question about that then.
Yes.
Now, I don't wear a talis, so I don't know for certain, but isn't the talis, I know Tehillat is blue, but aren't the colored stripes on a talis actually black? Unless it's a really dark shade of navy, and I never realized.
It's a great question. So let's pause it and we'll get back to it. But so just to appreciate for a second. So we have this flag, which was designed originally in Boston, 1891. Then it was adopted by the Zionist Congress in 1897. This is a full half a century before the State of Israel was even founded. But what they both did, they designed it based on the talis. So what's going on with the talis? Where does that come from? So we know that we have, the talis does have the stripes on the side. Now, Daphne mentioned that the talis stripes that we have are actually black. And that is correct. I can grab a talis of mine right here. Give me just 10 seconds. So here is a talis, and the truth is talises, they are black, they're not dark navy, but the reason that's the case is because, well, there's really two main reasons why. The stripes on the talis are supposed to represent the tehillah, the blue and tehillah. Now, so why would they be black? So there's two main reasons why that's the case. A is because black dye is cheaper than blue dye, so historically it was easier to get a hold of black dye. That's probably the real reason why. The other reason why is because while we know that, and most likely, Tehillah is this nice, beautiful shade of blue, as you can see right here, and my talis strings. But there is some debate. The Rambam writes, when he describes the color of Tehillah, he says it's like the blue of midnight blue. That is almost black. So maybe there is some basis for the black stripes. Regardless of whether or not the stripes are blue or black, they're supposed to be representing the talis, which is an alakhlid, a shade of blue.
And where Wait, but don't some people have a talis with like white stripes? I've seen like,
yeah, yes.
From far it looks like a fully white talis.
Yeah, exactly. So that's actually right here, the Prima Gaudium. He records that this is only a Ashkenazi custom. He writes the custom of having the blue stripes in the talis is zechel talis, is a remembrance of talis, and that it was only a custom amongst Ashkenazim. Sephardi talisim do not have the black stripes. I remember when I was in Israel, so when everyone gets from and starts to wear the wool tzitzis. So everyone goes to Mei Sharim to buy them. And then the question is, do you want to have the white stripes or the black stripes? The black stripes are known as the racing stripes. And the reason why you want to have the black stripes is because that way everyone can see it through your shirt and know you're so firm that you're wearing wool tzitzis. And the reason why you wouldn't want the black stripes is because it looks silly seeing the black stripes through your shirt. So some people get the... So remember, my first pair I think I got were the Sephardi ones, because I didn't like having it where you can see through the shirt and see the black stripes. No, different customs. But regardless, the custom of the blue stripes on the edge of the talis are based off of a remembrance of tcheles. Now, why is that significant? Because the question is, why is there tcheles on tzitzis to begin with? The Torah tells us that the mitzvah of tcheles, we're supposed to put it onto the talis, onto the tzitzis. And then says the Torah, says here, this is where you see my pointer. So these will be as fringes upon your garment. Or so you will see the tcheles string. As kol mitzvos Hashem, you will remember all the mitzvos of God. You will do them. You will not stray after your hearts and after your eyes. Ashartem zonim achrim, which we are prone to stray after. So the point of the tcheles on the talis to begin with is supposed to be a reminder of our fidelity and connection with God. So if you think about it, how does that come about? How does seeing the blue, beautiful blue string remind you of God? So there's a famous Gemara. The Gemara says in Menachos, on Daf Mem Gimel and Beis, says Rabbi Meir Omer, this whole thing is backwards, I apologize. Mipnei ma nishtana, it says, how is tcheles different than any other color dye? Because the color of tcheles, the blue of tcheles, reminds you of the sea, and the sea reminds you of the heavens, and the heavens remind you of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, of God. So ultimately, the way when we look at tcheles, we look at the tcheles, and it reminds us of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, reminds us of God, reminds us of our connection and commitment to Shmiras HaMitzvah. So, at the end of the day, the blue stripes, while the Zionists may not have realized it, by putting the blue stripes on the edge of the Israeli flag, they were really instilling within it a connection, a reminder to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, as far as That's the first step. The blue stripes and the Israeli flag are a reminder of a Kadosh Baruch Hu connection, our responsibility to keep mitzvahs. So that's step one. But what about the star? Where did the star of David come from? We all call it the Magen David, the shield of David. But where did that come from? So this too is interesting, a little bit more controversial. Rav Moshe Feinstein, this is a beautiful portrait of him. If you want, you can find this portrait on M. Shapiro. Shapiro spelled with a C, H-A-P-R-O. You can purchase it online. But a really penetrating image of Moshe. He writes, it's in Orach Chaim, Chelek Gimel, Shuva, Simen, Tes, Vav, 15. Kifi sheyadua ze me'os b'shanim sha'asu tzir magin David al parochos v'al me'ilim v'me'pechot. Right, we've had a custom already for many years, hundreds of years already. It's been a custom in Shoals to put the shield of David, the Jewish star, on the Aron Kodesh and on the Sefer Torah themselves and on the covers of the Bima, etc., the Shulchan. So where did what's the significance of that? So he gives a really interesting suggestion. Ulamata l'chol arba ruchas hashemayim. Maybe it's possible that this six-pointed star is really supposed to be a reminder that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is lamala, lamata, and all four directions. If we go back and look at the star for a second, so we have lamala, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is above and below, and then these refer to front, back, and the two sides. kind of hard to picture it, considering that the star is not really a 3D image, and it doesn't really have that shape. But that's Ramosha's creative suggestion as to what the significance of the flag of the star is. It's reminding us of God being in all directions. Okay. But what's the history of it? So then he writes, V'shaychis shem David lo yidua. And why do they call it the Magen David? Unclear why that's the case. It says, maybe, v'ulai, who's similar to David, shebatach v'chamosav, al sham yisbarach, shumalach l'mal l'mata, b'chol ruchos, ha-shemayim, shalachin lo haya yari m'melchim basar dam. It's possibly said that it was found on, or it was a connection to David, that he was fully committed to Kadosh Baruch Hu, had completed Emunah and Kadosh Baruch Hu in his war. That's why he was successful. But really unclear the connection to David HaMelech. The idea that this was on the shield of David HaMelech's warriors is highly unlikely. As a matter of fact, Gershon Shalom, the famous historian, in 1949, he did an inquiry, research into the history of the Star of David. And he wrote that, as a matter of fact, if you look at any history, that this Magen David, this two triangle star, is not Jewish in origin. It was seen to be some sort of a common star, which was actually preceded the pentagram, the five pointed star. That is the one which, you know, is the not Jewish star, which you can write without lifting your pencil off the ground. I remember when I was in school, I used to doodle a lot. I was a big doodler, and I used to draw non-Jewish stars all over my pages, because you can just do it without lifting your pencil or pen. But even this old star was predated, you know, any significant connection to the Jewish people. And he even says that you can see that it was on many ancient buildings, but at a certain point it did become more and more common at Jewish locations. However, is a really disturbing historical fact, because if you look at this old synagogue in Capernaum, which was dated back to the 2nd or 3rd century, and the same, so people, oh look, it's very old, but in that same show, they also have a swastika right next to it. And obviously no one will argue that the swastika is a holy Jewish symbol as well. So, regardless of it, he points out that it's hard to say that this really is a inherently Jewish symbol. Inherently Jewish symbol. Speaking of a swastika in Jewish places, This is really another disturbing story, but true. All right, Cheryl, you have a question? No? Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah.
On any ancient coins, because I know there are ancient coins from as old as the Mishnah period. Do you see this star?
Question. I do not believe so, but I have to look into it more, but I do not believe. I believe that we do not see any Jewish. Okay. Yeah.
So I think you see the menorah on some of those ancient coins.
Yes,
the menorah. Obviously, that's
another place. Yeah. I do not believe it's the star, but I have to look at more to give you a question. Okay. But speaking of the swastika being in Jewish places, so I used to go to a yeshiva, and my in-laws live in Connecticut, so I used to go to a yeshiva called Yeshiva's Beis Binyamin, which was in Stamford, Connecticut. Very old yeshiva, and it was in a very old building. And I remember the first time I went to the yeshiva to go daven Marv, I looked in the floor of the yeshiva, and the entire design of the floor is tile in swastika patterns. And I was absolutely, this is only a few years ago, this is like 4 or 5 years ago. I was like, what in the world's going on here? So I asked, and they said the building is very old. It predated any strong connection between Nazis and the swastika. And the yeshiva never had enough money to redo the tile flooring. Absolutely crazy. I was so shocked by that. A few years later, the yeshiva actually ended up closing down and moving to Lakewood or Muncie. And I thought that was appropriate considering the building was covered in swastikas. But that is a connection. Interesting to, you know, if anyone ever does any historical research, they'd be confused to thinking that, oh, Jews, even into the 20th century, 21st century, we're totally okay with the swastika. I mean, it's not the case. But in 1627, Emperor Ferdinand, he approved the seal of the Prague community to be the six-sided star, the Magen David. That was the letters, Mem, Gimel, Nun, Dalet, Vav, Dalet. the three, six letters of that word mugging, David. And at that point forward, it's in 1627, the star became commonplace first in Prague, and then it spread. It was on tombstones and in shoals and on bimas and in the Jewish buildings. And then, if you fast forward, so in 1897, when the Zionists were trying to choose it, right, so they had their basic outline, the framework of the Talis symbol, and they wanted to put something in the middle. We needed some sort of symbol in the middle of the flag. They chose the Magen David for two reasons. Two reasons. That's actually quite interesting. Let's read his words inside. He says, on the one hand, its wide diffusion during the previous century, its appearance in every new synagogue on the stationery of many charitable organizations had made it known to everybody. So on the one hand, it was very recognizable. People knew that was clearly a Jewish association, the Magen David. On the other hand, the other milah that it had, the other virtue that it had, was not explicitly identified with a religious association in the consciousness of the contemporaries. So this lack became its virtue. The symbol did not arouse memories of the past. It could be filled with hope for the future. We know that the early Zionists were very much, many of them, at least the ones who were influential, instrumental in the founding of the State of Israel, were very much anti-religious. And they found value, the fact that this Shield of David was not the menorah. Menorah was a religious symbol. You know, it was not any other biblical symbol. This was one which was really secular and that was used by Jewish organizations across the spectrum. And therefore, that was a value which they wanted to take with them in the founding of the new state, which is supposed to be a non-religious entity. However, Gershon Shalom continues and says that as much as the Zionists tried to instill importance and chashivas into the state of this Shield of David, that was not what, that is not the reason why it became so ubiquitous and really became the so meaningful to the Jewish people. And he writes, but even Zionism did not do so much to confer the sacredness of a true symbol on the Shield of David as did that mad dictator, referring to Hitler Yimach Shemo, who made of it a badge of shame for millions of our people, who compelled them to wear it in publicly on their clothing as a badge of exclusion and of eventual extermination. Under this sign, they moved along the road of horror and degradation, struggle and heroism. If there be such a thing as a soil that grows meaningful symbols, this is it. But some have said, the sign under which they went to destruction to serve into the gas chambers deserves to be discarded for a sign that will signify life. But it's also possible to think in the opposite fashion. The sign that in our days was sanctified by suffering and torture has won its right to be the sign that will light up the road of construction and life. The going down is a prelude to the raising up. Where it was humbled, there you will find it exalted. So this beautiful idea from Gershon Shalom that ultimately what gave the Kedusha and the endurance to the Magen David and consequently the Israeli flag as well was the fact that we wore it. We wore it during those horrific years as the in our the time of suffering and persecution. That really, and that speaks to the Jewish spirit of being able to take that symbol, which was only a few years, think about it, the absolute strength of the Jewish people. You know, people who were forced to wear that flag, their families who were star. Just a few years prior, in 1945 even, and just 3 years later to have that flag be hoisted as the symbol of the new state speaks to the tremendous power of emunah, of strength and of resilience of the Jewish people. Absolutely incredible. And there's one more idea as far as the significance of the flag, and that really is from a beautiful piece from Rabbi Herschel Schechter, which actually is quoting from a story about Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik. His story is an amazing story. So he writes, this is found in Nefesh HaRab. That's the Herschel Schechter's Sefer about Rabbi Soloveitchik. It looks like this, if you want to see what the copy looks like. This is it, Nefesh HaRab. Or some call it Nefesh Herb. Hey, Reish Beis. Okay. So, Pam Hiskaima Kenesia Gedola Mitama Aguda B'Yerushalayim B'Malon Sha'al Gago Ha'yaminafnef Dekel HaKachov HaLaban Shamadina. So there was once a national Aguda convention international go to convention in a hotel in Yerushalayim. And on top of the hotel, there was the Israeli flag was waving. Kachol v'laban. And there were those who were participating in the convention who were did not appreciate that on their hotel was waving this Israeli flag. Achen, on the other hand, however, meidach kisa levakish me'amalon sheyoridu asadegel gamkin lo yamin hanimus. But they knew they weren't foolish to ask to lower the Israeli flag would have upset people as well. So what are they going to do? On the one hand, the flag being there was insulting to them because it represented this treif medina. On the other hand, to lower it would also be offensive to people. So the sof yatz misho. So they had an idea. Someone had a good Yiddish a cup, and he thought of a kach. He chlutu l'masa. So what do they do? This was his suggestion. Shialu al gagam alon degalim mikol hamedinos shemehem bol shetef bekenes. Says, oh, they should have everyone's flags from all different countries, everyone's nationality, their flag should be raised. Memela, toch de galay medinas America, Tsarfat, Anglia. So if they have there the American flag and the French flag and British flag, etc. So shublo hergishu halilo ha'ina imus b'masha gam degol ha'medina Yisrael ha'yagam kim minafnev. So by doing so, by having everyone's flag, it'll batal b'shishim, no longer be offensive to have the Israeli flag waving. Now listen to this incredible how things unfolded. When the secular newspapers found out about this, they got superbly upset at the Aguda. And this is what their most meaningful and poignant complaints against the Aguda was. Says, if you know the history during the Holocaust, there were numerous times as Jews were trying to flee out of Europe, out of the death chamber of Europe to come to Eretz Yisrael, to come to Palestine, and the British wouldn't let them in. The British boats specifically turned them away by Haifa when they got to Eretz Yisrael. They turned them back. V'hadegel shalahem. And the British flag, which is called the Union Jack. It's a British flag, the term. Ha'yiminaf b'neib al-gabe ani yoseihem shahiyu b'yamatichon. And there in the Mediterranean Sea was the British ships with their Union Jack flag waving. V'hechziru esa'oni yosha im ha'pleitim l'Europa. And they forced these Jews who were trying to escape back to Europe, lahariga vadais, to certain death. Ba'achshav, achre kuma medina, hichshar ha'union jack as a kachol v'lavan. Now you have the chutzpah to say that the Union Jack, which was a symbol of the death of thousands of Jews who were forced back to Europe, that's going to be the one to be machshar our Israeli flag, the flag of our nation. And as can be understood, it was a matter of complete disgust and disgrace amongst the secular newspapers at the time with their bewilderment at the distorted the calculations of the Aguda during that convention. So later that year, B'shana Hahi, Kishadarash Rabbeinu Bifnei Kanas HaMizrahi, when Rabbi Soloveitchik got up to speak at the Mizrahi convention, Dibir Ketzas al Dvar Inyan Degel Hadina, he decided to speak about the Israeli flag. Dilachor al Pidin Lekat Bichlaw Shum Halacha Ledoros Shal Degalim. There's no halacha for generations about there being a Jewish flag. But we don't have it. Like he says, the only time we had it was during the Midbar, and that was only for the short time period for the encampments. Ach! Now listen to Rabbi Soloveitchik's depth and his incredible, sharp analysis. Amar Az Rabbeinu, but Rabbi Soloveitchik explained, Shechemeduma lo sheyish sheif echa b'shulchan aruch asher l'seif ahu shayach degel hamadina. But there actually is, he said, a halachic significance to the flag of the state of Israel. Why is that? V'hanu kid mevur b'sof b'gemara sof moed katan Shatanaim tiknu sheikberu esakol bekrichim shutim. The halacha is that one should be buried in simple shrouds. That's the halacha, right? We only bury someone in simple shrouds. You're not buried in your clothing. However, he writes, halacha is sheimatsu yisrael harger. But if you find a Jew who was murdered, God forbid, a Jew who was murdered, yikberuhu bekemosha matzuhu below tachrichim. A Jew who was murdered, God forbid, and unfortunately, as we see in the news again today, another Israeli was murdered. Actually, this time was an American citizen. Hashem yinkom demo, and all of our brothers and sisters who have been killed in terrorist attacks in the last few weeks and before that. But if you see a Jew who was murdered, so you bury him in their clothing. Why is that? This is the reason is because it should be a source of Kadosh Baruch Hu should a source of bringing mercy of Kadosh Baruch Hu, both to avenge her death and to have rachamim on Klal Yisrael. Shemina Shemaim Yiru Heich Shneishana Kavurasam Bishar Mesim Shlo Nikbar Batachrichim Karagil V'Yiru Bazar Rachamim Shemaim. And that's the idea. If someone, God forbid, is murdered, so the clothes take on Kedusha, and we bury someone in their clothes. Now says Rabbi Soloveitchik, V'hachanami yesh lomar gabe degel ha-medina. The same can be said regarding the Israeli flag. Shebesof milchemes ha-shichror, at the end of the War of Independence, kava zman musuyim la-hachzokas ha-shtachim, the United Nations set a time that at, I don't know what hour or day it was, but whatever property, whatever territory was under Israeli rule would be part of the new state of Israel, and anything under otherwise would be part of the partitioned off for the Arabs. V'chol shatach karka sheyeh b'yitachas yad ha-yudim yishar b'yad Yisrael. And any property which would be in Israeli control would be part of the new state of Israel. V'kach hayah. So in that time, the law was set, the truce was set, that anything which is under Jewish rule, when the truce takes effect, will be considered Jewish property. So how do they determine that? So ba'osa tkufa nishpach har beidam yehudi b'chdei la'alos degalei medina al shtachim merubim. The way that you signified whether or not it was Jewish property, Jewish land, Jewish territory, was by having an Israeli flag waving there. So many, many soldiers gave up their lives to sacrifice, to stick an Israeli flag into the ground, to concretize it and sanctify it as Jewish, part of the Jewish settlement. They gave up their lives for one purpose, to raise the Jewish flag. Because so many lives were lost, sacrificing to be able to raise the Israeli flag. So now this flag should be a semel, the shvichas dam yudim. It's a symbol of the sacrifice that we have paid over and over and over again and continue to pay to this day for our connection and commitment to the land of Israel. And when that flag is waving, when any Israeli flag is waving in our homes, in our shuls, in our schools, it's a reminder for us and a reminder to Kadosh Baruch Hu to have mercy on the Jewish people. A beautiful idea from Rabbi Soloveitchik. So just to recap the history. Rabbi Jacob Askowitz designed the flag in Boston in 1891. The blue stripes represent comes from the talus, which come from Tcheles, which remind us of God. David Wolfson and others chose this as the flag at the Zionist Convention. It became the flag of the State of Israel, together with the Magen David, which is seems to probably be theoretically the most arbitrary part of the flag. However, our Jewish history, our experience of persecution, and ultimately our sacrifice for the State of Israel, for the flag, have imbued within it certainly historical significance and Kedusha. So I thank you all for joining us. Any questions, feel free to stay on for a few more minutes.
I have a question. Was Rabbi Askowitz, or whatever, how do you pronounce his last name? Was he Orthodox?
I do not believe so, but I'm not positive.
Because he's the one who had the reason that the stripes are like the talus.
Uh-huh.
And we understood it to be of a very religious reason, because it reminds us to be Shomer Mitzvos. That's our way of understanding it. But like, what was his logic? I mean, it could be he was still very spiritually, even if he wasn't an Orthodox rabbi. Yeah. Like, it's fine. I'm just curious, like, I, like when we, you were explaining that, I was like, well, the early Zionists, like that second president of the World Zionist Conference, or whatever, they were extremely secular.
Yeah.
So it's almost surprising that he would even copy that idea.
That's a good question. As to why, whether or not, you know, their religious affiliation and observance. I don't know about Rabbi Jacob Askowitz. I know that Wolfson actually grew up.
He did. Interesting.
I don't know. I don't think he was observant his whole life, but he grew up from a group observant. And then they even if they weren't observant themselves, but they definitely appreciated their Jewish identity. And yeah, the talus was worn by all groups of Jews. You know, these weren't Jews who were assimilated. You know, they were identified as Jews.
Right. And then my next question on this whole shir is that, so we have the State of Israel flag, and then we have also the City of Jerusalem has a flag. And I think a lot of the major cities in Israel all have flags.
Yeah.
Can we apply the same logic that maybe there's religious significance to those flags as well? I mean, like, Jerusalem is a holy city.
Sure, that's a good question. I don't think the same. The Svar Rebbe Soloveitchik, I don't think it would apply.
Right.
I don't think it's really a flag because of its history, but it's an interesting question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you for joining us, everybody. Wishing everyone a wonderful evening. Thank you for participating in the 3-part Israeli history series. Wishing everyone a good tovach and haslacha rabba with everyone's perm preparations. Like I mentioned.